Readers must freely make the decision to read, and then must exercise their freedom in interpreting and making sense of the writer's text. And in doing so, they recognize that what they are interpreting is not some portion of the natural world, but rather the fruit of the writer's creativity, that is, a product of freedom. Quote, "Thus, reading is an exercise in generosity. The reader's feelings have their permanent source in freedom, that is, they are all generous, for I call a feeling generous which has its origin and its end in freedom." End quote. WIL, page 58. And with freedom comes responsibility. Every literary creation, according to Sartre, must necessarily, even if unintentionally and even if only implicitly, present a philosophy, a general view of what is true and important and good. This creates a responsibility on the part of writers to consider consciously whether their work, should it find readers, will help to promote a better world, or will it instead, even if only unwittingly, help to perpetuate oppression and injustice, and stand as an obstacle to moral and political progress. Though many writers may try to evade this responsibility by adopting a posture of neutrality, such a stance, in fact, has the effect, in a world in which structures are already in place, of lending support to the status quo. The writer's proper task is to reveal, and thus to combat ignorance and claims of innocence, claims that can be used to justify passivity and the evasion of responsibility on the part of their readers. Quote, "To write is both to disclose the world and to offer it as a task to the generosity of the reader," end quote. WIL, page 65. Writers thus bear a heavy responsibility to disclose reality accurately, to deal with topics of vital importance, and to do so in a way that is fully respectful of the reader's freedom to respond. Writers, in turn, also ask a great deal of readers. When a reader decides to read, the result is, quote, "a pact of generosity between the author and reader. Each one trusts the other. Each one counts on the other, demands of the other as much as he demands of himself. For this confidence is itself generosity. Nothing can force the author to believe that his reader will use his freedom. Nothing can force the reader to believe that the author has used his. Both of them make a free decision. There is then established a dialectical going and coming. When I read, I make demands. If my demands are met, what I am then reading provokes me to demand more of the author, which means to demand of the author that he demand more of me. And, vice versa, the author's demand is that I carry my demands to the highest pitch. Thus, my freedom, by revealing itself, reveals the freedom of the other." End quote. WIL, pages 61-62. It is in the light of this point about the mutual demands of readers and writers that Sartre's naming, quote, "criticism and the demand for evidence," end quote, as a freedom-laden value is to be understood. Notice that when writers present a logical, evidence-based argument for some conclusion, they are making a non-coercive appeal to the freedom of their readers to assess the cogency of the argument, and then to decide, on that basis, whether to give voluntary assent to its conclusion. It is not as if the writer were asking his or her readers to accept the conclusion based on faith, authority, tradition, or the fear of being punished for the heresy of disagreeing with it. And the readers, for the same reason, are right to demand evidence as a precondition for their willingness to give their assent to an author's conclusions. Rational criticism is likewise non-coercive and respectful of freedom. It is on the basis of the give and take of such criticism that we engage in a collaborative project of selectively rejecting, affirming, and revising our hypotheses so that our disclosures of reality might achieve progressively greater levels of accuracy.